should we start recording an episode about the Berenstain Bears now?
Yes, absolutely.
Now that we've like talked enough and that we're comfortable with each other, and like we're in the space and no one's gonna start running a chainsaw.
let's do that. I promise nothing.
And I actually have my my machine on. It's recording.
Wow, this is all like right. I'm usually a really bad luck charm with this thing. I'm surprised the battery didn't die out in the middle of the recording.
There they are. I'm at full bars. I have a working SD card. I'm actually recording the things we're saying.
Okay.
I think that is the bare minimum that you need for a podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
Every time you're going to say bear, it's going to make really awkward eye contact.
I'm just going to make a bear noise. I can't do a bear noise. Years of this podcast, I haven't perfected my bear yell. So here we go. I'm going to do my intro.
All right.
We will do an amazing episode.
Sounds good.
Welcome back to Deep in Bear Country, a Berenstain Bearcast. I'm your host, Phil Gonzalez, and today there are people in my house. There are people in my house, and I'm so afraid because I don't usually have anyone here, and I don't usually let anyone in, and it's like my sanctuary's been invaded by people with opinions about things. I usually have like this barrier of like a phone or a Skype between me and the people I'm talking to. And so if things sound weird or if I sound a little more strained or just on edge, it's because there's people in my house and they're looking at me. And who are these people? Say hello, people.
Hello.
Hey, hello there.
This is the worst thing I've ever recorded.
Hey, do you hear those chainsaws in the background?
There are no chainsaws. The reason we are all in the house is because there's no chainsaws in the house. And if you need that explained to you, please just swing by one day and I'll tell you why the presence of chainsaws
It's a wonderful story. It has lots of layers. There's a chainsaw outside.
Well, we are welcoming back one guest. Say hello, welcoming back guest.
Hey, everybody. This is Brian Skinner.
Don't ever talk like that.
Oh, I'm just going to do it right at you to make you feel uncomfortable.
But joining Brian, arriving in the same car as Brian, is right across the table.
It's me, Josh Hollis.
Now, why did you guys show up and why did you show up together?
Well, we both have a show together called Predictocast, and I came out to visit Brian and just hang out for the weekend, and we decided to come do this show with you. You didn't invite us, but we showed up anyway.
I know where you live, so I thought we'd come here and hopefully you'd be recording, because you're always recording something.
Mm-hmm.
So I get in here, avoid all the chainsaw noises, which is really unnerving, and then we'll grab a mic, and thankfully you were doing a Bearcast show, so that worked out great.
Well, chances are if you walk into my house, I'm going to at some point make you record an episode of my show. So it's lucky that you're here. Now, Brian, you were in the Berenstain Bears and the... which one was it? The Bad Dream?
The Bad Dream,
It was Berenstain Bears and the Bad Dream. I just think of it as the He-Man episode.
The toy episode. But no, it was about Little Sister's Bad Dream.
Right.
And the cartoon and the book.
Right. And like so many Berenstain Bears stories, it's about one thing, but it's really about something else.
Right. So it was really about toys, but it was also about her bad dreams and, let's just say, consumerism for no reason.
And bad television shows.
Bad television shows.
it's one of those books that just sort of went off the rails and became far more interesting for it. This book is positions itself as something and then it becomes something else.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'm a little unfamiliar with the Berenstain Bears canon.
Yeah.
But I guess, you know, this is one of the longer chapter books.
Yeah.
So it's for, I guess it's geared at maybe older readers, older readers. I don't know what the lesson is here. Like Brian and I were talking about it before we showed up, and is there a lesson?
Well, let's find out.
Yeah, that's what we're here to suss out.
The book that we are discussing is 1995's The Berenstain Bears and the Freaky Funhouse, which has quite a cover just to start off with. Last episode was The Berenstain Bears and the Galloping Ghost, which had a ghost on a horse chasing down our cubs. This book has the cubs being terrorized by what looks like a Frankenstein's monster.
Franken-bear's monster. Thank you very much.
Oh, we'll get to that. which, you know, just the very idea that bear can be the Stein suffix in the world of the bears, which makes me wonder just like
what otherwise would it be? Barons?
Frankenstein?
Frankenstein?
Frankenstein monster.
Frankenstein. I guess
Berenstain. Berenstain.
In my world, it's Frankenstein's monster. No,
we just had an episode on our show called Dr. Hackenstein. So we've had this conversation of the butchering of the name Frankenstein.
Well, in this world, it'd be Dr. Hackenbear.
So. Oh, that's true.
So this is two books in a row where we've gotten sort of a little Halloween-y theme going on, which I'm more than happy with because I love Halloween. I love spook-em-ups, and I love incredibly scary stories. So I thought that this book was going to be about the cubs maybe getting trapped in a funhouse.
That could have been good.
Yeah, I was really hoping for that because that sounded fun.
Some sort of haunting or some sort of like mystery.
Maybe
or
there's a creepy house at the end of the street or something in their neighborhood that they think is haunted, and they go
right.
They go exploring it, and everything. Everything they think is a ghost or a monster turns out to just be a trick of the light or their imagination.
Right,
taking over.
Maybe like someone sets up a haunted house.
Oh
like,
yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
Like they're all afraid to go in, and then like maybe they think it's a really haunt. Like I don't know. Like it says like this is a book about a freaky fun house.
No, it's a game about. It's a book about Midway games and how they're rigged, and yeah. And carny talk
and attempted murder.
Oh yes, yeah, murder. We'll get to that.
We'll get to the attempted murder, and not. This is not a case of haha. We're a bunch of adults talking about a children's book and throwing around words like attempted murder. The phrase attempted murder is in this book.
Oh, someone gets charged with it by the police force, yeah. And they're going to be convicted of it because that's what they did.
Yes, this is a. This book goes where I did not think it was going to go.
Yeah, for real.
So what actually happens in this book? Let's tiptoe our way through it.
Sure.
So we start off with the cubs. They're trying to figure out what they're going to do. And we find out that video games will rot your brain.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, that is a message that we get pretty quickly. They decide to go, I think, to the carnival instead of the games. Is that right?
They're thinking of going to softball instead because that was more intellectually stimulating.
Right.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, because you have to think about it's a game of numbers.
That's right.
Right. We get Cousin Freddy trash talking video games, which is the weirdest. Like, never have we seen like. So there's two characters now in the Bears universe. There's Cousin Freddy. And there's Ferdy Factual. Ferdy Factual is not in this book. Ferdy Factual is like the unrepentant nerd.
Okay.
He's a horrible cub. He's terrible. Nobody likes him. Because all he does is like throw his intelligence around.
And I feel for him now.
And condescend to people. And
it's like you're talking to me.
and that's the kind of thing Ferdy would have said. Because he's super smart. He's above everything else.
I read this and all I wanted to do was have a video game where you actually calculate your score out with a calculator when you're done. Like that would make that would redeem video games to everybody. Like if you just had to sit there and do math at the end, like, well, I jumped over 5 barrels, that's times 10, and then like input your own score. Hey, then it's an intellectual pursuit.
Well, this was 95. What video games were big in 95?
Oh man, I don't know.
So it's like Doom.
Doom, Wolfenstein?
Or Quake?
Berenstain's Castle.
Wolfenbear? Is Castle Wolfenbear?
Wolfenbear.
Is that what we're doing with this episode?
Yeah.
Well, we've already started. Why not just fall down this hill?
Yeah.
Well, we know that World War II existed in Bear World, so.
Yeah, that's true, so.
You just go down this rabbit hole that says that's where it's leading us.
There's a mecha.
Yes. Oh, okay. We know where you're going.
Yeah. Only 90s kids.
So only 90s kids who remember the Mecha Bear suit. So the hospital is there's this whole thing about the hospital.
Yeah.
And Dr. Gert.
Dr. Gert, who's the cubs know is smart, honest, upstanding, but who's she with? Who's she a twosome with?
Yeah.
Well, she's with Ralph Ripoff, which is the most obvious name for a character.
Yeah. So Ralph Ripoff is one of my favorite characters in the whole series.
So what I loved about this character was consistently in this book, the ladies like him. They find him charming.
Yeah.
Like, even Mama is like, oh, you wouldn't understand. He's charming.
Oh, yeah. And Papa Bear is not happy about that.
Not really, but his name's Ralph Ripoff. You know, he's actually probably right. He's not that charming.
Yeah. So so listeners know that I love Ralph Ripoff. He started in the cartoon. He was actually created for the Saturday morning series, voiced by Frank Welker.
Oh, weird. Finally some work for that guy.
As were like 90% of the characters in that show.
Oh, okay.
And his name in the cartoon was Raffish Ralph, which seems more like a nickname. Like, oh, there's Raffish Ralph.
Yeah.
B, makes him seem a little more charming.
Yeah.
Like, he's Raffish. Like, he's a fast talker and he's more than just a con artist. He, you know, everything he does is kind of a con. He's a dirty, rotten scoundrel.
Yeah.
He's a Steve Martin type character.
Unfortunately, he also talked like W.C. Fields.
Oh, okay.
Well, so he talked like this, see? And he was like,
I remember that character from the cartoon.
Yeah.
I definitely remember that.
And he was always like trying to get one over on Papa Bear. Like, that was like, Papa Bear was his foil, and Raffish Ralph was always like, and I asked Mike Berenstain, when I met him, I said, like, why did they change Raffish Ralph to Ralph Ripoff? And he was like, the reason he gave was the reason I assume. He's like, nobody knows what Raffish means.
Oh, okay.
He's like, it's just,
that makes sense.
He's like, it's a word that will go over kids' heads.
Yeah. They wouldn't know if it's a hard A or a soft A. Rayfish?
There's a reason that Raffish Ralph didn't become the Pokemon of his generation. The Pikachu. Kids weren't going around wearing Raffish Ralph shirts. It's because they didn't get his name.
Gotta scam them all. I barely got that out of my own mouth.
It was so horrible, it got stuck in your
tumor. Your body was fighting against it.
Yeah, but no, but if you can imagine like a guy who's supposed to be somewhat of a ladies' man, but he talks like this, like he's always like talking like this. See,
that seems so appealing.
Well, yeah. It's one of the seven cartoon voices that existed from 1982 through 1990.
Right.
I mean, either that or he had to be a Woody Allen impression.
I love Frank Welker, and I love his voices, and I love that he's now on Twitter. He's been on Twitter for a few weeks.
Oh,
nice.
And I tried to communicate with him, but I got nothing in return.
Just send him a bunch of like just sound effects, like beep beep, honk honk.
Well, he's either like playing like dog barks or he's playing like Megatron.
Yeah.
So it's just like the guy can do anything.
I know.
He has done everything.
I'm hoping if I compliment him enough on episode, like maybe we'll get a little traffic.
Can you come in here? I know it's about the Berenstain Bears quick. Can you just do the Megatron voice for me a little bit?
read an excerpt as Megatron.
Well, as we were saying, Dr. Gert Grizzly, who we know from the Berenstain Bears Go to the Doctor, like she's one of the oldest members of our book series. She's been around since the early days. She's the town doctor. She's hooked up with Ralph. Like,
they're a twosome.
What kind of twosome are they?
They're a gruesome twosome. Which, this is so okay. mean. This
yeah,
is
this
so
is super mean. We were talking about this. Like, gruesome twosome is it fits Ralph Ripoff, but it doesn't fit Dr. Gert, who is this great person, who's a great doctor that they all like.
Yeah.
It's like the only way it would work is if, okay, it's Ralph Ripoff, and also Dr. Gert has had tons of malpractice suits leveled against her. Like, that's the only way that gruesome twosome works.
Like, I get what the Cubs were going for. Like, they don't want to see the two of them together.
Yeah.
But gruesome twosome, hey, that just fits both. That's a blanket statement.
Yeah, it applies to both of them.
And I like the fact that everyone keeps using the word twosome. It's so adorable.
You know, no one's ever called a couple that.
I know. Like, but everyone, the adults do.
Yeah. They're a twosome.
They're a twosome.
Well, and what other word rhymes with twosome?
Oh,
toothsome?
Man. Toothsome?
A toothsome twosome?
Toothsome
twosome. That's good.
Yeah, well, it rhymes. That's all I got.
If Dr. Gert were a dentist, that would work.
We don't know that she's not a dentist.
She's not a dentist because there is a dentist.
Well, it can be two dentists.
Do denti. There goes Ralph Ripoff and his two denti.
It's always possible, man.
But they are appalled like that Dr. Gert Grizzly and Ralph may be canoodling. Like, I guess it's like
they figure out very quickly because Papa and Mom have gone to the hospital as well to talk about a hospital wing fundraiser, and they figure, well, he's trying to get in on it to scam her.
Yeah.
And they're right. Like, from the start,
they know
from moment one, they're correct.
Well, this is where my question comes in, because motivations in this book start getting a little murky.
Okay. Yeah. So, morally, you have a percentage line between stealing 80% from the hospital and stealing 60%.
Right.
Like, is where in there for you? Like, because Ralph Ripoff was fine stealing a good chunk of money from the hospital.
But he doesn't want to steal the majority of the money.
Well, still the majority, because it's over 50%.
Well, true, but...
but not that far over 50%.
Right.
Not leaving them with $12.97?
I think it was $14 and $14. Some change.
So what happens? What are we talking about here?
Well, okay, so...
a morally gray area in St. Bear's book?
That's... yeah, it's interesting. But yeah, the Cubs pretty much know from the beginning that Ralph is a bad guy and he's trying to steal the money from the hospital. They don't know exactly how he's going to do it, but we find out pretty quickly that it's part of a scam that he's worked up with some guy named Captain Billy.
Okay. So Captain Billy is...
who has a circus.
Has a circus. Right. I have a question for you. Why is Captain Billy a captain? Why does he have to be a captain and the head of a circus? What, like...
We never see him on a boat.
I'm going to just... make a wild guess here, and maybe he's not a real captain.
Okay.
He's a captain out in international waters, so he can do whatever he wants.
This man can do whatever he wants.
Now, there was illegal circuses out in international waters.
There was a magazine from the early 20th century called Captain Billy's Whiz Bang.
Oh. Yep.
Captain Billy's Whiz Bang. It gets referenced in The Music Man as like a piece of lascivious literature. It was kind of like the Mad Magazine of its day. Like it was.
We need a new cultural point that's not Mad Magazine anymore, because right. It's not a cultural point anymore
for us.
Yeah,
the touchstone is behind.
It was the Beano of its day. I guess we have British friends out there.
It's the what's a good meme page?
Right. It was the Newgrounds. No. All my references.
E-bombs world.
E-bombs world.
All my references are too old. What are the kids into these days?
I don't know.
What am I kidding? No kids listen to this.
We'll go with E-Bombs World.
No one under a certain age listens to this show.
There you go.
No, it was kind of the Mad Magazine of its day, and a comedy magazine, but it told like adulty jokes. Like every cover had like a drawing of like a woman like in a compromising position, but like for like 1901. Her ankle would be showing and a guy would in a top hat would be looking over his shoulder like
I'm fanning myself right now.
Right. That was the kind of like, but it was, you know, it was a magazine you didn't want your kids getting their hands on. And I'm wondering if like calling the captain Captain Billy
to make sure that we know that he's
is also
still a weird thing to do, since this book came out in 95, right?
Yes, but the Berenstains were being raised in the 1920s.
That's true.
Like, so that makes sense.
Now, if he was Cap'n Billy, we would know he's a good guy. But he's Captain Billy.
Like a Cap'n D's?
Cap'n Crunch?
Like a Cap'n Crunch.
Yeah.
He's not a Cap'n.
Is Cap'n Crunch a good guy?
I don't know. He tears out the roof of your mouth.
Yeah. I don't know. I only eat healthy cereals. I don't know what you kids are doing.
But you gotta go crazy. Like, even in the world of Cap'n Crunch, like in his like mythology, is he good?
I think so. I think the Crunch Berries are the bad guys.
The Crunch Berries? Soggies. You're thinking of the Soggies. The Crunch Berries are inanimate objects.
I'm sure there's at least one with has a face on it, right?
They are unthinking, unfeeling.
I only eat the off-brand Cap'n Crunch, Admiral Crunch.
So... I don't know. I still think the Crunch Berries are an unfeeling wave of destruction. They are out to destroy the high seas.
Did you ever have Donkey Kong cereal? I don't know where your cultural touchstones begin.
No, I once came down to the States and saw that you guys did have Donkey Kong.
Tried that.
And I really wanted
Donkey Kong cereal was just Captain Crunch, just shaped more like barrels. Like that's literally all it was. But it was, if anything, it was even harder on the roof of your mouth.
Well, he's a bad guy for sure.
Wait, is my mind being blown right now? Is that what those shapes are supposed to be in Cap'n Crunch?
I thought they were supposed to be like...
treasure chests.
Oh, treasure chests.
Oh, well, yes. Sense. My mind is blown. I didn't realize that.
You're welcome. You can call me Wikipedia Brian right now.
What are the brown pieces in Lucky Charms supposed to be shaped like?
The round pieces?
The brown pieces.
The brown pieces.
The non-marshmallows.
Could you call it the actual cereal.
Are they runes?
Yes,
maybe
they're ancient runes,
leprechaun runes. Like if you arrange them in the right order, does it like
spells a
you could
some
open
sort
a portal,
of message?
You end up in Stonehenge. Like how did I get here?
You'll end up in a bowl of marshmallow mateys, the off brand.
Now I just want to eat those marshmallows.
You can buy a.
Remember when red balloons were? We're getting off track. Back to the book.
When red balloons showed up, yep,
yeah,
I do.
That was a big deal.
And red balloons. You're like, that's not a lucky sign.
That's not a thing. I was actively upset about it. I didn't eat it because I only eat healthy cereals, though.
Well, they needed red something, and they already had pink hearts.
Yeah, that's true. They get rid of pink hearts. Like there was a time they all mixed the colors together. Like,
what was it? Pink hearts, orange stars,
yellow moons.
Yellow moons. Yellow moons came later.
Yeah.
Were rainbows always in
rainbows
there?
Came much later.
Much later.
Rainbows,
yeah.
much later. There's green clovers, but imagine the green clovers are inside the hat now, or is that just a thing?
There's a hat?
I think so. Green hat with a clover in the middle.
Oh my god!
Like two shades of green.
Technology now my mind is blown.
Yeah, marshmallow technology is upgraded considerably.
They're technically called mallows.
Well, we're on page 8 of this book. So we've learned we are suspicious of Ralph Ripoff. A, because his last name is Ripoff.
Yeah.
B, because he's friends with someone named Captain Billy, who has a thug.
Can C also be that his name is still Ripoff? Like, can it be two letters?
But he is spending a lot of time with Dr. Gert, and so people are kind of giving them the benefit of the doubt. Also,
it seems genuine.
Never gossip about adults.
Yes,
that's one of the big
lessons
in this book.
I'm going to give eye contact with my daughter right now, so she knows.
No gossiping about adults.
No gossiping about adults.
Not no gossiping.
Just no gossiping about adults.
And you're allowed to take seriously what you've heard. Just
don't talk about it.
Right.
Yep.
So the idea is that Ralph Ripoff is going to help Dr. Gert Grizzly raise money for a new wing of the hospital, which the idea is that he knows how to get people to part with their money really fast.
Yeah, a fact that he readily admits while trying to cover it up. Oh, I'm really good about separating suckers people from their money or slash raising funds or whatever.
I can't remember the last time I spat out my true intentions and then said and then covered it up and nobody caught me on it.
Yeah. I guess everyone wants to believe he's doing good.
Well, he's a member of the community, which is important.
Yes.
Like he's not. Captain Billy is an outsider. Ralph Ripoff is one of them.
Right.
Oh, I found the line. He says, "I've had some experience in separating folks from their raising funds."
Which what?
What does that mean? Yeah, it's basically the same thing.
Hey, if you want to get the long green, you got to go hard for it.
The long green.
The long green.
What is that? Is that an expression?
That is in the book.
Long green.
Hey, do you not talk carny? Because you're going to learn some in this book.
There's some carny talk in this book. We meet Captain Billy. We meet his right-hand man, Otto, there's a nice little, like, Ralph says that, like, people are putty in his hands, and then later on, Otto says, if he messes up, he'll be putty in my hands.
Hey, your voice sounds like
Gravel under a truck tire.
Thank you.
Yeah, it sounded like truck tires on gravel.
So I read these books out loud to my youngest, and I'm doing voices as I read them. And I was trying to choose voices for these characters, and I had Captain Billy very gruff.
Yeah.
And I had Otto sort of like this, like, ah, you're Otto. But then it said, like, Otto's voice is like gravel, and I was like, okay, I have to go back.
Switch
and I
those.
Had to reread the chapter, though. I was like, I have to do this for, we're going back a few pages, Mitz. So they pull into town with, like, their truck circus. It's like a traveling... Is it a circus or a carnival?
They call it a circus. It is clearly a carnival.
Yeah.
I mean, it has a bit of the sideshows, which you wouldn't often see at carnivals.
Right.
But it has all the rides you would expect from it. It has the Midway. It has the Funhouse. It has the Tilt-A-Whirl.
But then Captain Billy refers to himself as the ringmaster, right?
Have you ever gone in the middle? Like, has everyone stood in the middle of the Gravitron and like, I am the ringmaster?
This is... But it'd be like if you went to a fair and here's the haunted house and here's the Midway and someone was like, I love the circus. And you're like, no, like,
I would expect my grandmother to say that.
But this is, there's no animals. There's no, doesn't seem to be any acts. It's just.
I know they both start with C and they both, you're going for the same reason, which is cotton candy.
Yeah.
But
more C's.
Yeah, more C's. But it's, they're different things.
Yeah.
They are. there's no Shriners, there's no elephants. This is a carnival.
That's what defines circus for you, Shriners, Shriners. And elephants.
I've never been to a circus. I only go to mentally healthy places.
I only go to human circuses like the Cirque du Soleil or.
We are the real most fascinating animal to watch.
We are the most dangerous prey.
The Carnival du Soleil is what I go to.
So one of the things that Captain Billy Circus has is a funhouse.
A freaky funhouse.
Yeah. And it says it's a trailer basically, like with an opening at either end.
Yeah.
And it says on both sides of it was the coolest painting the Cubs had ever seen. There were spider webs in the corners and evil-eyed bats hanging upside down all along the top. At the bottom, a row of strange little creatures with pointy ears and huge bloodshot eyes peered out from the gloom. Along the middle, glowing against the purplish-black background, loomed terrifying witches, goblins, and demons. And at the back, in between two openings with curtains over them, stood the huge Frankenbear monster.
This sounds pretty cool.
It does sound pretty cool, but we all know from experience that paintings on carnival rides
have nothing to do
with what's inside.
No, it's very much like video store days where you would walk around and look at the cool box art and go, that movie's going to be great.
Right.
And it's never measures up to what you think it will.
That's a rule for carnivals in general.
Yeah.
Well, and they're also usually, there's like off-brand Hollywood actor paint, like portrait.
Oh, yeah.
There's usually a really terribly perspective Bruce Willis.
All right. Like, yeah, it's Frankenbear's monster and Bruce Bear Willis from Bear Hard.
Like, sort of right underneath.
And Super Mario for some reason.
And you can tell that someone copied a movie poster by hand, kind of glancing over their shoulder at it.
Yeah.
I guess to a bunch of kids, it probably looked really cool. But I want to see it painted. Some listener out there with a talent for painting, please paint a legit carnival looking version of the freaky funhouse for me, and I will, I don't know, dedicate an episode of my show to you.
Hey, you can retweet it. That's social media engagement right there. That's what the kids do these days.
So everyone's making fun of Sister because she's terrified of the freaky funhouse. She doesn't want to go in. They tell her to go on the teacup ride as a joke, I think teacup rides are pretty fun.
As long as they have strap it, they have some. I've been on ones where they don't have. You just kind of spin into each other and it's smashed together. That's not any fun. Then you hit that center circle with your teeth.
Carnival are you going to?
The most dangerous carnival in America.
Well, Canada has a lot less, rules and safety regulations. Turn it to smash them.
So the Cubs get hired on as carnies.
Yes, they
basically.
Do. Yeah, they learn a little kayfabe and they become carnies.
They run into Captain Billy and he decides to bring them on.
Well, that's you keep your enemies close.
Yes. Yeah.
Dr. Gert Grizzly, has to sign a contract, and here's where the subterfuge comes in. Explain what happens with this contract.
Well, she's given this contract that says essentially they will get 80% of the money for the hospital. That's what her contract says.
That's her contract.
That she reads. They have her sign three additional copies, which say something completely different, which is that the circus will get 80% of the money, and she'll get 20% minus the circus's fees.
And expenses.
So it will leave her with basically nothing. And she does not read these copies very clearly. She just signs them because she assumes that they say the same thing.
She's an honest person. She expects honesty back from Captain Billy.
Right. She does not read the three copies of the contract.
But she does read the first one. She does say, I always read before I sign.
Because she's warned by the police who show up at this thing, and they are immediately suspicious of Captain Billy.
Everyone is suspicious of this entire racket, and everyone is right.
Yeah. They tell her, the cop, Captain Bruno, I think is his name, or is it Officer Bruno?
Police Chief Bruno.
Chief Bruno, yeah. He says, make sure that you read the contract, and she says, of course, I always do. And he's like, okay, fine. And they just assume that it's all good. But it is not all good.
Is that something you can do where just like put one contract in the front and put two other different contracts from behind and go like, oh, the front first one, I'll just ignore that one. This is how contracts work.
I'm curious as to how she's entering into a contract that is going to pay for a wing of her hospital without having a lawyer or somebody
No one else is there signing except her.
Is there anybody higher up at the hospital than her?
Than a doctor?
Is she the hospital administrator as well?
I guess. As far as we know, she's also the only doctor in Bear Country.
And she might also be a dentist, according to me.
That's you. Where does Ralph stand on this? What does he think is going to happen?
Well, he assumes, as Brian mentioned earlier, that the circus is going to get 60% of the money, and that 40% is going to go to the hospital, and he seems to be okay with that.
He's okay taking like a larger cut. He understands what the deal is. He's working with Captain Billy. They are old running mates.
Yeah.
But he is not cool with what Captain Billy is doing above and beyond this.
Now, here's where I stand on this whole thing. Captain Billy, because of his swindling and nefarious ways, stands to pull in 80% of the take as opposed to 20% of the take. If he hadn't swindled her, he would have gotten 100% of the take just by having a circus in town.
Right. If he had just come into town.
Yeah. I don't understand how this is actually a swindle.
Because he had all...
He's a legit businessman.
He made it worse for himself.
Yes, he has a carnival. He has all the licenses.
Right.
He could just set it up. Like... the police are worried about him. They don't, you know, they suspect him of something, but there's no law that we see that you can't have a carnival for no reason.
And they have permission.
But here's the problem. He loves the game. He needs a mark. If there's no mark, why even do it?
I'm assuming that
he's just miserable. If he had been a legit businessman, he'd just be so bored.
He'd be so rich, but so bored.
I'm assuming that people are more likely to come to the carnival thinking it's for a good cause.
Have you ever gone to a carnival that wasn't to raise money for something? Because I have never noticed what any of the carnivals are raising money for.
We had an abandoned grocery store across the street from our high school.
This sounds spooky. Let's keep it going.
It's called Abandoned Safeway. It went out of business.
It was called Abandoned Safeway. That's self
prophecy. Did you see that the Abandoned Safeway is empty? When did it go up?
The name is now appropriate.
Vince, it became a Spirit Halloween store.
No, it was an abandoned Safeway, and it was a big grocery store, so it had a big parking lot that just sat empty for a while. And there was a traveling carnival that would come through every, at least once a year.
Yeah, we had that.
Set up shop across the street from the high school. It wasn't for any reason.
Yeah, we had one in the Kmart parking lot. Was early summer. One in the Zeller's parking lot on the other side of town in late summer. It was, you could set your clock by it. And I'm sure they had permits. I hope the hospital's got wings off it, but maybe an angel gets its wings off it. But I think all that money went to their captains.
With the safety standards in Canada, I'm sure a few people got their wings off of it.
Well, you know. Hey, a little danger, a little spice.
It's not the carnival until the Ferris wheel breaks loose and goes careening down the street.
We stay warm just based on our fear of death constantly in Canada.
It's not a good carnival season unless at least one person loses a limb.
You need a mark. It's not why is not interesting.
It's all part of the game, see?
Oh, well, we should talk about those. The games.
Let's talk about these carnival games.
I love every part of this because we have Ralph Ripoff is in charge of the Midway because this is his old gig before coming into town.
Yeah.
They are rigged. He has the Cubs help him. They're his sidekicks in this. They are very excited. Everyone's very excited to win prizes. There's fancy prizes like stereos and flashlights.
The Cubs love flashlights. This has been mentioned in more than one book. If a flashlight is an option, the Cubs go nuts for it.
They're like, there's so many things it can be. It can be a flashlight, a lightsaber, a flashlight.
A flashlight gets stolen in one of the other chapter books, and it's like the biggest deal. Someone loses their flashlight.
Like, any of us remember, because you were a 90s kid, not us. Were flashlights expensive back
then? Is this a thing?
Wow, I don't know.
How calculators in the 70s cost $2,000?
Maybe. I mean, I think they're still expensive if you're getting like, maybe they're giving away mag lights or something. Those things cost like $50.
Ooh, nice.
Like one of those heavy police flashlights.
They'll be hard to knock off, though.
Well, you got keep in mind, too, that even though this is a book written for 90s kids, it was being written by people, let's see, if it was Leo Berenstain writing at this point, it probably would have been a guy in his mid to late 40s.
Oh, okay.
Writing this book. So
that's so old.
Yeah. So he was probably writing from the perspective of what a kid childhood was like 25 years previous.
So what from our perspective, what would be the big prize we would put there for kids who wouldn't possibly actually want it?
Well, I'm thinking of what's at the State Fair.
Okay. I've never been. I don't go anywhere or do anything.
Okay, what's at the carnival games at the Mall of America?
Nerds.
Like
the candy, not the people.
Not the people.
Candy necklaces.
I don't know. I mean, I guess, I don't know, t-shirts are pretty popular now, yeah. But I don't know if that was like a big thing in the 90s as far as like winning a carnival game. If you got a t-shirt, maybe like a weird
CD,
hat.
A CD, compact disc, a Walkman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the stereo seems like that's
shuffle.
A legit prize.
Yeah. It was a ghetto blaster. Thank you very much. It would blast the ghetto.
Wow. I don't know. I don't know what would be like. I'm thinking of me in 95. I was 10 years old.
I would want Optimus Prime.
Like some sort of robot toy would be.
No, the actual guy.
But like a
Peter
toy.
Peter Cullen comes walking up. I guess you won me in this carnival prize.
I played Pac-Man so much.
But I think.
So much skee ball.
Yeah, I think like a robot toy would be something pretty cool, maybe,
yeah.
I guess.
Robots are, you know, robots are forever.
Yeah, but
they
in,
are.
90, in 95? 95. What was it? In 95, I was starting college.
A Game Boy.
I'd say a Discman.
Yeah, a Discman would be good.
Yeah,
not the official brand Discman.
No, not the official brand one.
Discman.
Yeah, a Discman. Like which seemed like magic to have a compact disc with you. And then you shake it.
You couldn't walk anywhere with it.
Oh, it would definitely be a Discman without shock protection.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you would have been the king of the hill to have it in 1995.
Just playing all my.
Well, the games are obviously rigged.
Yes.
But
they don't realize it at first. They have to.
Right.
They have their suspicions.
We do learn I did learn the expression, the walking Charlie.
Ooh, nice. Oh, yeah. It's a robot.
Yeah.
That you knock its head off, or you knock a can off of its head.
Yeah.
Yeah. Walking Charlie was just something I was not familiar with. Was this something you knew of?
No, definitely not.
Were you always like, let's go to the Walking Charlie?
Yeah, that was my favorite Midway game whenever I would go to the carnival.
I was never looking past the water gun thing, which you try to shoot
the target.
The target, and then throwing...
rings?
No, that's for chumps. That's obviously rigged. Darts at balloons.
Oh, okay.
Mine was always whack-a-mole.
Whack-a-mole.
Oh, okay.
Because I was really good... Because what you do is you stare with whack-a-mole. I would always watch the rubes... Trying to hit the moles when they came out of the holes. That's not what you do.
No, you got to figure out what they
come in. You have to soften your focus and stare at the center of the board. And you have to hit you have to aim as they're coming up. And you have to, so you...
You have to sort of become one with the mole.
You have to enter like a zone.
Yeah, you have to aim for where the mole will be, not where it is.
Yep. If you do that, you cannot lose.
You cannot lose.
Take that to the bank, kids.
Take that to the bank. That's your Midway advice.
What I liked about this was that they suspected that they were rigged. They talked to Ralph Ripoff about it, and he immediately admits, oh, yeah, they're totally rigged.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's for a good cause, so right. It's totally fine.
That was great. Like, I was expecting him to go like, no, wait. No, he's like, yeah, of course it's rigged. Like,
yeah.
It's a Midway.
So in one of the first chapter book, the first chapter book that was published was The Berenstain Bears in the Drug-Free Zone. And
great name.
Drugs are going around the school.
Oh boy.
And they're trying to figure out who's the supplier for the dealers. And Ralph Ripoff is the first name that gets brought up. And the thing you learn in that book is that although Ralph is a swindler and he will drain you of your funds and leave you destitute, he would never hurt a cub. And he would never hurt a member of the community.
Oh, good.
So,
was it revealed to be Doug Druggy who's giving out the
was
drugs?
Was it an outsider? Because
no.
Outsiders are the the real problem.
The dealer, the school dealer, was too tall, Grizzly.
Oh, what?
And the suppliers were the Bog Brothers, who live in the Forbidden Bog.
Oh, and too tall is mentioned in this book.
He's
too.
A rube.
And they were just rearrested in the last book. The Bog Brothers got out of prison, and they were just rearrested.
Oh, just keep them in there. Lock them up forever.
Yeah, they are. They're,
let
they
them
are
rot.
No good.
No.
They
good.
Live in a Forbidden Bog. Their last name is Bog.
That's true. I live in Skinnerville, so.
So then this is where we learn about Bucks, Moolah, and the Long Green.
Oh, yeah.
Which is... Oh, we also meet Primo, the world's strongest bear.
Who's just Otto.
Yeah, who's just Otto. And Belinda, the bearded lady.
He's a man who looks good in a low-cut dress.
Yes. And you find out later that he does look good in a low-cut dress.
He absolutely
like, they
just, does.
They say, like, there was Belinda, and, yep, that's a good-looking low-cut dress.
Yeah, I mean, they are... Honestly, besides the whole what they're going to do later, everyone in on this scam, which apparently the carnival is an entire scam, is very upfront about everything they're doing.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, yeah, that's rigged. Oh, yeah, the bearded lady's a good dude. Oh, yeah, Otto just has two roles.
Right.
It's like, if they keep it on trying to, like, I'm going to catch you on this, like, yeah, of course.
Yeah. They are honest swindlers.
Well, one of them is more honest than others.
We get this exchange between... So the carnival is in full swing now, and the whole... All of Bear Country is there, and Ralph Ripoff is walking arm in arm with Dr. Gert, and Farmer... There's this exchange between Farmer Ben and Papa, where Farmer Ben stared after them with a sour look on his face. Huh, he said. That swindler is no friend of mine. Wouldn't trust him as far as I can throw my prize bull.
He's the one who can throw the bull, said Papa.
Yes, I was going to actually screen cap that and send it to you because I was like, is that a reference to the word I think it is?
He's the one who can throw the bull. Like, that's a great turn of phrase.
It is. He's Papa should just, like, you know, just like give someone a fist bump next time. I mean,
that
Papa.
That should be a t-shirt that you would win at a carnival.
Yes.
Papa Bear with his arms crossed and that phrase alongside him.
No, above it it says, don't have a cow, man.
I was going to like humorously posit the idea of a Berenstain Bears themed carnival, but then I was like, oh wait, there was Berenstain Bear Country at like various like Knott's Berry Farms or whatever. So
yeah,
maybe they did have that shirt.
Oh, that
he's the one who can throw the bull.
And the back is just a picture of a bull.
It's out of context. It doesn't make any sense.
Hey.
Oh, maybe there would be like a mechanical bull.
Oh yeah.
And if you won that shirt.
Oh, great. That's excellent.
The carnival mechanical bull.
Yes, a mechanical bull at a children's carnival. We've decided that it's no longer bad to discuss the private business of adults because now that they're walking arm in arm, it's public business.
Yeah, they're a public twosome.
Yes. And everyone's noticing that no one's winning the carnival games. They're only winning cheap little dolls.
But what I love is that, like, this upsets the older cubs. Mm-hmm. Sister's like, no, I like my doll.
Yeah.
Yeah, cute. She's happy with what she got.
Which, in general, kids win the crappy prizes, which is what you win.
Yeah.
They're fine.
Well, they're better than the giant dolls that are all stiff and made out of that, like, stiff carnival stuffed animal material.
Yeah.
That's, like, unyielding and, like, has, like, a lot of, like the... Here's my thing about carnival stuffed animals. This is not true anymore because this is like when I was a kid, but carnival stuffed animals, bears, rabbits, dogs, cats, what have you, always, always, always had a sticker on them that represented their navel. Just a black dot for their navel.
Do you understand how stuffed bears are born?
And I always hated that. Like, I was like, I don't need a belly button on my doll. Like,
this is where it was removed from its mother's womb.
Like, this thing is already cheap, and I don't need, like, it doesn't need to be, like, biologically accurate, I guess. It's like my...
That's true.
Yeah, so we're just sort of barreling. We haven't even gotten to the freaky fun house yet.
Because the book hasn't.
Like, yeah, the book hasn't.
Like, I was like, how many pages in until we actually get to the freaky...
I think it's chapter 8 before we actually get to the freaky fun house.
Because they are going to go to it.
Yeah.
And then they decide, no, if we do that, we'll have nothing left over for tomorrow.
Well, they've psyched themselves up that it's going to be terrifying because
it is terrifying.
They see that they see that art on the side of the trailer and they just assume this is going to be super scary. And even though they tease Sis about it, they also are kind of scared.
So
they keep putting it off as much as they can to prolong the inevitable and also to make themselves more scared, probably.
Hey, entertainment's inside yourself. But it also pushes it further back in the book, which is like, hey, the book's called Freaky Funhouse.
Well, and so, but it also builds up this false sense that this is what we're building to.
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah. This is the climax of the book.
Like, obviously, when they go in the Freaky Funhouse, that's where all the action's going to happen.
If this was an illustrated book, like fully illustrated, mm-hmm. like that would be the climax. Like, you're getting to the point where you actually see the illustrations of all the crazy things in there.
Yeah.
But it's not.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like they get to the Freaky Funhouse, but then the book continues.
Right.
And then they go back to it later. So it does sort of take place. The finale sort of takes place because the Freaky Funhouse shares a wall with
right.
Captain Billy's office.
But it could very well have just been like the trailer.
Yeah.
Because
Bears and Bears in the adjoining room.
The freakiness or not of the Funhouse does not play a role in the climax
no.
of this book.
Not at all. It's just there.
They just happen to be in a giant trailer. It is a pretty freaky funhouse, though, for the Cubs. What do you guys think? What are your histories with exhibits like this, rides like this? Were you big haunted house fans or not?
I mean, I am currently. I think as a kid, I was very much like the Cubs in that I would see a thing and the art. And I remember this very vividly because when I was a kid, we had a very similar situation to what you described earlier about a carnival coming through every year, setting up in the same place, and having pretty much the same rides, you know, a few things changed here and there, but they always had a haunted house yeah. ride that I was far too terrified to go into because of the very lurid art on the outside. Yeah. There was monsters and devils and witches and skeletons and all kinds of very like dark stuff that fascinated me, but also frightened me at the same time. And I don't think that I ever went in to that ride because I think I was just far too scared. And then by that point, the carnival stopped coming around, or when it came around again, it didn't have that anymore. And so I never got to go in and see what was probably something very tame.
Yeah.
But by my imagination, it was probably absolutely horrifying. And the same goes for like haunted houses and things. I build them up in my head. And especially when I was a kid and I would go to these things, and it ultimately was fun. And that's why I think I still love them today, because there's still that sort of childlike thing of this is going to be terrifying, but I know that it's not real and I'm going to go in and have a good time and then it'll be over with.
So you go to them now?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Do you go to the ones where you sign waivers?
No. Okay. So that is a fun
We had a long conversation about haunted houses.
Yesterday,
yeah.
I like the ones that are obvious and very theatrical and yeah. very over the top, where people are dressed as zombies or monsters or something like that. The current trend of the really hardcore haunted houses where you have to sign waivers, or you meet them and they put you in a van at midnight and drive you to the location, and like, oh, you may have to crawl in the dirt and your shoes may get stolen and you may have to put a bag over your head and hide in a corner for 3 minutes. And it's like, that's a little too real for me. Right. I would prefer some slight distance in my scares. I need to know they're fake, because right. I don't need this to turn into a horror movie when I'm in the middle of the woods at 12:30 at night.
I don't think our carnival's ever had the haunted rides. Mm-hmm. What I had more experience with was we go on vacations, especially PEI, Prince Edward Island had this, because Prince Edward Island in Canada, especially as a kid, was a tourist trap. It's Anna Green Gables is there. But there's all kinds of other things around
She's still there?
She is still old. There. She still haunts it to this day as this fictional character. But they have the Anna Green Gables house.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very interesting. But there's like a Ripley's Believe It or Not museum there. And there are wax museums. And every wing of these wax museums would have the horror wing. Mm-hmm. And I was always fascinated to go to them, but I didn't want to because I knew they'd be terrifying. But my brother, who's 5 years older than me, would basically say, like, we're both in here to get to the exit. I have to take you through there. And I'm like, okay, well, it's not gonna be too bad. And some of them, I'm sure if I look back now, they were goofy, but there was like decapitations, like you know, people grabbing, like holding heads and like limbs severed off. They were like legitimate things that you wouldn't put around an area that has a lot of children's amusement areas. And that was kind of my experience with it. And it was deeply upsetting.
Yeah.
But I still to this day have a fondness of my heart for wax museums. I will sign any guest book with I Heart Wax. I go to a wax museum.
You didn't need stuff like that, though, because like Canada's just lousy with Wendigos, right?
Oh, all over the place.
Everywhere.
Well, that's why you stay inside most of the time.
Like, you step foot in the woods, you're just...
Don't go in the woods. You know, first off, moose are far more aggressive than you think they are. Also, the Wendigos.
There's that phrase, you can't see the forest for the Wendigos.
Exactly. The only place we have our hockey sticks to protect ourselves, it doesn't always work.
I can't even begin to imagine. Well, to answer my own question.
Yes, please.
No, I would never set foot in a thing like this when I was a kid. I still don't set foot in. So the State Fair, the Minnesota State Fair, has a permanent haunted house. It's there. It's this giant, giant mansion that's on the state fairgrounds, and it's not active year round.
Oh,
but if you go,
I wish that it was. That would be great.
But if you go to the state fair, you walk past it, it's just there's like fog pouring out of it, and like there's always like pop music, like Thriller and stuff like that. The Ghostbusters.
Is that currently happening?
Yeah, the state fair is up right now.
The moment.
Why did you not tell me this? I would have loved to go.
Because it's very, very, very busy on Labor Day weekend.
And you go, and there's the state fair haunted house. It's incongruous with the rest of the state fair, which is just like a state fair.
Yeah.
But it's just part of it. And
have you ever gone to Valley Scare?
I've not. See, I've lived here for almost 20 years now, and I've been to the state fair many times, and I've never gone into the state fair haunted house. Not because I think it's actually going to be scary, but because I still have that residual like childhood apprehension that just tells me don't do it, like just don't go in.
You know what's probably in there? Frankenbear's monster.
Probably. Well, I'll tell you what's in the Freaky Funhouse. A Frankenbear's monster.
Oh no.
So it lived up to the billing, like that was on the picture, and it's in there.
And can I just throw a shout out to Leo Berenstain or whoever wrote this part of the book and just say thank you for not referring to simply as Frankenbear?
Yes.
Like, I know it's pedantic and boring to talk about, but it's just nice that they refer to it only as the Frankenbear. Even the kids are like, the Frankenbear monster. Because, yeah. Like, I'm surprised they weren't like, the Frankenbear monster, because even though a lot of people refer to it as Frankenbear, that's actually incorrect. Even though there is a school of thought that says that the monster himself referred to himself as Frankenbear. And in the later movies, that was sort of the given name for the monster itself. The monster says, yes, master, and chases the kids. I assume it's a robot, but they never really go into that?
They called them their master. It's master. He just wanted to serve.
Suddenly, without warning, the monster's ugly mouth moved. Yes, master. His huge hands reached toward them, and they had to run under the monster's arms to get to the exit, which is crazy.
What's an ugly mouth? What makes a mouth ugly?
I don't know. That's a pretty ugly mouth, though, on that bear. Like,
well, yeah, I guess it is. It had to have been, you know, the mouth of a living being that was sewn back into the monster by Dr. Frankenbear.
Find me the ugliest mouth you can, Igor. Or
I wish that they had
Bear Gore.
I wish they had made it look like Frankenstein's monster was described as looking in the novel, which is like lustrous black hair and like thin black lips.
Oh yeah,
just like and a very tall, just a tall, beautiful man.
Yes, like that is always forgotten that it's Frankenstein's monster is a hunk.
So the kids run out. They help Ralph with his games, and Too Tall figures out that the games are rigged.
Yep.
And he gets called out for being a rube.
A rube.
And then he's taken away to
he's
never be seen.
Dragged away by bouncers.
To be never seen again.
Is like, that what happens at carnivals? Like,
did they throw him in the river?
Again? Yeah.
Like, where do they go?
No one mentions the fate of Too Tall at the end of this book.
Slightly off property, and it's like there. Like,
so Too Tall calls out the games for being rigged. Brother Bear yells, "Hey, rube!" And then
some thugs show up and drag him away.
And drag him. That's it. And
the wonderful illustration of, hey, Rube.
Never to be seen again.
So Ralph Ripoff, you start seeing him feel like he's feeling weird about the whole swindle thing. And so he goes to confront his boss, Cap'n Billy.
Yes.
And there's like a big argument, and Ralph basically almost comes to, well, he does he come he comes to blows with like fist, physically comes to blows with him, right? Like, yes. Otto hits him in the face.
Yeah, Otto,
yeah,
knocks him out because Otto is the strong man.
Yeah. And that's kind of when you get the sense that this is realer than,
yeah, like I even then, I thought they would just leave him, but it escalates in a way that I was not expecting.
Right. So the Cubs have gone back into the funhouse to spy on Ralph. Because they think that Ralph and Billy are still in cahoots. Like, they don't realize that Ralph is going to confront
them.
They
think they're a twosome.
A twosome. They're the real gruesome twosome.
Actually, Otto and Captain Billy.
Otto and Captain Billy
are a gruesome twosome.
So they've snuck into the funhouse because it connects with the Captain Billy's office, which is also his truck.
Yeah, and they're no longer afraid of it because it's off.
Right, it's turned off. They're spying on him through a vent. They're all stacking each other's shoulders.
That is really uncomfortable.
There's like five bears like stacked up.
Yeah, it's weird.
And
I've never done that. We should do it after the show.
And they realize that even though they've overheard the swindle be described, they don't have any evidence for it.
Right. And you need evidence. This is a land of laws.
Right. And they also find out that Captain Billy is planning after the final fireworks tonight. He's going to just cut and run.
Is he doing the fireworks?
There's just fireworks.
All right, cool.
At the end of a fair, the bears just set off fireworks.
It's a circus. That's what makes it not
a
carnival.
That is weird, though, because like we already mentioned, if Captain Billy had not entered into this sort of deal with Dr. Gert, he could just take all the money and leave whenever he wanted, but he still says, I'll deliver her, take her cut of the take myself. And it's like, why? Just pack up and go.
Yeah, he's fleeing anyway. Like, there's this...
Yeah,
like, why give her any money? Why not say, I'll give it to you tomorrow, and then you're gone in the dark of night?
That's what circuses do. Like, that's a thing.
That is a thing, though. Like, the circus is there, and then the next day it's completely gone. No shred of evidence that they were ever there.
It's the smell of cabbage for some reason.
Yeah, and salted earth.
Salted earth. Nothing will grow in that parking lot again.
Just a sign that says, we'll be back next year.
And Captain Billy does take the $14.17 personally to Dr. Gert.
Which is odd. Why would he even do that?
He just wants to see her face fall.
He is such an awful man.
He is a terrible captain.
And he gives her a list of expenses to show like why it's only that much money. And we have this horrible moment where it says, only moments after Billy had left, Ralph Ripoff came running to Dr. Gert's door. She was on her knees, staring down at the list of expenses, and she was crying. Which is like the saddest.
I don't know. I thought that was her getting her comeuppance for working with these people in the first place. Like, everyone in town knew this moment was coming except for the doctor. So as people who do a show about predicting things, I feel personally offended by her lack of foresight.
Well, he does. When Ralph does show up, he's like, he calls Captain Billy a swindler. Which is very weird. I mean, we've already talked about it, but it is very weird for this guy to be okay with ripping people off in the community, but still liking them and still feeling protective of them. It's like that weird thing of if these people are going to be ripped off, it's going to be by me.
Yeah.
I mean, if he takes the money out of town, there's less for Ralph.
Oh, that's true.
Oh, maybe Ralph's just worried about the competition.
Ralph was upset because he was planning on burning down that hospital wing.
He's got an insurance on it.
It's got to be built or I'm broke.
Well, why did Ralph Ripoff have an insurance policy on this hospital?
So the Cubs break back into the office because they want to find the original contract that Gert signed, even though there's no reason to believe it would still exist.
No. Why,
all he had to do was burn it.
Right.
And he actually, once again, Captain Billy's greatest enemy is himself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Sister Bear finds a bunch of torn up pieces of paper in the wastebasket, but put a pin in that because we'll get back to that later.
Yeah.
Because they are interrupted by the return of Captain Billy and Otto.
Yep.
They sneak out through the vent. They get back into the funhouse. This is where Ralph gets just clobbered.
Yeah.
Like, there's actually an illustration of Ralph unconscious on the ground. Just laid out with Captain Billy standing over him with Otto saying, tie him up.
See, I was worried when I saw that picture and then read, like, I thought they were just going to whatever with him. Like, whatever, like kid book, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, they'll tie him up and they'll just throw him out when they leave. And
yeah.
Like, he'll have to escape later.
Escape later. And then, like, when they threw him into the river and then the Cubs act like he's dead.
So
I was worried he was dead from the assault. Like, so, they were throwing his dead body off the train.
Well, Captain Billy says that they're going to dump him in the river. The circus pulls up stakes, by the way, and the Cubs are now kidnapped.
Yeah, they're trapped
inside. They've been bear-napped. They're trapped in the Freaky Funhouse. They overhear Captain Billy say, we're going to dump him in the river. We'll get to Great Roaring River and dump him in. The paragraph after that is chilling. It says, by now the cubs were so scared they had to put their hands over one another's mouths to keep each other from screaming. Captain Billy and Otto probably couldn't hear what was happening in the funhouse, but the cubs were taking no chances. They didn't want to join Ralph at the bottom of Great Roaring River.
So now they have been through this funhouse, this freaky funhouse, which gave them primal fear. But now they know true fear.
Right.
The fear of death.
I mean, yeah, that's a pretty crazy thing to have to grapple with. Like, there is a good chance that we might get thrown in the river if we are found.
Yeah, so like this person that I know, a member of a community who I don't respect, but I know I'm familiar with, my mother finds him charming, is now dead.
Yes.
He is. These people have killed him. And if we see him, they will kill us.
Right.
That's a lot for someone of, especially sister's age, to grapple right. with.
Like, you've just listened to a, like you said, not a friend, but an associate get murdered in the next room.
Right.
As far as you know, this guy is dead at the bottom of a river.
Right. And you don't even have evidence of, like, all you wanted was a contract.
Right.
Like, you want to do some detective work, why these milk bottles are so heavy, and now death is at your door.
Yeah, like so. What are the ages that these chapter books were sort of aimed at?
Well, it's a little vague, but the reason that they came out was kind of to capitalize on the sudden resurgence of popularity in children's chapter books. So the same ages that were reading Goosebumps, Babysitter's Club, like that kind of book, like
Little Sister's Big Idea,
late. Elementary school, basically early junior high, but late elementary school, because the kids in these books, even though they never come out and say it, they seem to be in like sixth grade or so, around there. I mean, they act like high schoolers sometimes, but I think it's just
depending on what the plot needs to be.
But sixth to eighth grade is kind of how they act. But so that means that the audience it's aiming at is a little younger than that.
So I wonder if like an audience, the kids reading these books were shocked by this development,
I was shocked by this development.
I was too, but like. They immediately, I mean, if this is like the first sort of time in their sort of reading lives where they have to grapple with, oh, these characters could potentially be killed and thrown in the river.
And very casually, like Captain Bill, like it makes Otto hungry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like knocking off a witness gives him hunger pangs. He's got to go take care of that.
Like we're joking about this, but this would be chilling in real life.
Well, yeah, like so we've already seen like in the drug book that drugs exist in Bear Country, that the officer tells the cubs not to try to investigate because the Bog Brothers could be involved and they are dangerous. They will kill you on sight.
Yeah.
Like they are armed and dangerous bears.
It's a forbidden bog. Don't go there.
The threat of bodily harm in these books is very real. We know that there are teachers at the school who have been dangerous to the students. There have been kids whose lives have been threatened by like authority figures.
Well, like if you think about the Goosebump books and some of the other ones, Fear Street in particular, like things happen to those characters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I'm wondering, since I'm sort of covering these in more or less chronological order, like the order in which they came out, the last book, The Galloping Ghost, the ghost who isn't actually in the book, but whose legend is in the book, was that like it was a guy who was accused of a crime. He was accused of being a highwayman. And he was chased by a townspeople into the forest where he hit a patch of quicksand and he and his horse were dragged to the bottom and died. The visual of a man hounded by townspeople into a dark forest, and then he and his horse dying in, like, slowly being sucked down into the mud. That's a pretty intense image.
I feel like if they did a book where there was witch trials in Bear Country in the past, like where they actually burned members of the community.
Right. I guess, kids were probably shocked by how suddenly serious this turned. But I bet it was kind of thrilling,
the stakes have gone up.
It's that feeling when you're a kid and you read something like this and you're like, they're taking me serious as a reader. Like,
yeah.
They think I can handle this.
They think I can handle reading a book about this time the babysitters are babysitting twins. That's a lot of responsibility.
Hey, the second Babysitter's Club book is about a prank caller who calls people's houses, breathes heavily, and hangs up. And then later on that week, you will get broken into. And catch this serial housebreak. Like, it's pretty intense, like, for a kid's book.
Yeah. I will admit that I read most of the first like 25
Babysitter Clubs. Reading them.
And the third Babysitter Club book was an adaptation of Black Christmas.
Yes, that's true.
Well, also, I guess the point being is that kids who were reading books like this were kind of looking for a little danger.
I
was a big Goosebumps reader for sure around this time. So I was looking for something that was a little scary. I think that kind of goes into the haunted house, the love and fear of haunted houses.
You want there, if they're doing something dangerous, maybe not to the main character, but something that would make you think, well, the stakes are actual real for these characters. They aren't just going to walk through this book with no problems.
Yeah.
But at the same time,
it's still terrifying to hear a person that you know being thrown into the river and knowing you could be next.
And what's funny is so Cap'n Billy and Otto go off for a bite at the roadhouse.
Yeah.
The Cubs sneak into the office, use the car phone
which I was questioning to you.
Yeah.
Whether,
you're like, how'd they get a phone?
I'm like, it's a moving vehicle. I forgot car phones existed.
He makes a call from the car phone like early on in the book. And so the Cubs use it to call the police. The police show up. They arrest Captain Billy. They arrest Otto. And you're not given any closure with Ralph Ripoff.
Well, no, but what do they... I was questioning this part. What exactly do they arrest them for?
Attempt murder.
But that is just the word of the Cubs, which they believe, but
they find the contract, which was ripped up.
But they don't find that at first. They arrest them
right
away, and then that's when Sis remembers the torn up paper in the garbage can.
You have to understand they're outsiders.
True.
They're not from the town.
Right.
And the police were already suspect of them anyway.
I think we can solve every unsolved mystery in Bear Country.
I was going to say, there's probably been a lot of carnival workers arrested in Bear Country for a lot of different crimes.
That's probably true.
It's a paragraph. Chief Bruno shows up, arrests them, puts them in handcuffs. They'll go to jail for the rest of their lives for the murder of Ralph Ripoff. Like, it is said. There it is. There's the word. The murder of Ralph Ripoff. And Sister starts to cry. They get obsessed with the contract again. They find out that the pieces of paper in the wastebasket were the contract because the cleaning person was also Coco the clown.
Yes.
You can't trust a clown to empty a wastebasket.
Yeah, a bunch of clowns.
Well, they just say basically that he was probably very busy with the main garbage and forgot to come in and empty the office garbage.
I've been listening to that excuse for years, Coco the clown.
Well, and I liked that Chief Bruno said, "We're sure lucky that that's still there, because otherwise, what are we going to hold them on?"
Right. So I was thinking, I bet Sister has bad dreams from this. if a television show with a bad guy.
Right.
This is a real bad guy.
This is real trauma. Like,
unless she was on the bottom of the stack of bears and didn't see anything.
Like, if this is a movie, then there would be the final shot of this scenes of this movie would be Sister and Brother and Queenie and Fred sitting with like blankets over their shoulders as like the cops gave them like something hot to drink, and Mama and Papa like rushing up in their car like, "Oh my goodness, what happened? Like, we were so worried because you've been missing for however long they've driven out of town."
Yeah, that's like, hey, if Holly and Mitzi got like on a carnival truck and were driven out of town for some distance to a roadhouse, we would be worried, right?
Right. Well, yes.
Yeah, a little bit.
Well, and then we get the last chapter of this book, which is the return of Ralph Ripoff. He didn't die.
Yeah, this is the, like, don't worry, kids. I would be mad at him if I was...
Because he didn't call anyone?
No, he just went to his house.
Well, Papa Bear were probably pretty mad at him because he put his kids at risk.
Right. Like, Ralph Ripoff is kind of culpable in a lot of this.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's still culpable somewhat for the charges against the swindling stuff, because He facilitated
it. He made that happen.
I mean, he tried to stop it, but he still did it. But I mean, he's charming, so.
So he's found alive on his houseboat. You learn that he wasn't just a pickpocket and a carny; he was also an escape artist.
What use would that be? Until this point,
he was the Houdini of his day,
getting out of jail free.
And he escaped the bonds that bound him and swam to freedom, back to his houseboat. Where I assume he was just as traumatized as many of the cubs.
Maybe that explains his lack of communication with the authorities. Well, I'm lucky to be alive. Let me take a minute.
What's the last line about, real quick? His lasting damage.
Oh, well, this is what I wanted to point out. So this last chapter is like 3 pages long, and it ties up a lot of plot points.
Yeah.
It just rushes through them. They find the money behind a poster of Coco the Clown.
Coco the Clown is just all over the conclusion.
Despite not appearing in the book at all.
The Otto and Captain Billy are put on trial, found guilty, and sent to Bear Country prison.
Yep.
Like, bam, that happens. Dr. Gert's like, no, I never liked Ralph Ripoff.
Yeah.
That was the best part.
Like, I was just happy that he was making some money for my hospital.
I just wanted some long green.
Yeah.
Well,
what?
So it says that she got all the money she needed for the new hospital wing, which, does that mean that she got all of the money from the carnival? Did she get just what she was initially promised?
They probably liquidated the assets of the carnival, sold Coco the Clown to someone else, and the money made. Hospitals are cheap.
Yeah, this is nothing.
You're like, think about what a carnival must bring in. Think about what it costs to make a good hospital.
They could have made 3 hospitals for the amount of money this carnival was worth.
Jeez, they ripped off two tall.
But does that mean that all of the carnival employees were also crooked?
They were also liquidated.
By which I mean they were thrown in the river.
It's all for a good cause.
They cut the scene where you get to see the bearded lady be stripped of her beard.
Shave her. Like, you can't do this anymore.
But this is the most haunting part of the book. There was one thing about Ralph that did change, though. For the rest of his long, dishonest life, even in the hottest summer weather, he never, ever went swimming in Great Roaring River again. And the reason this is the most haunting part of the book to me...
Because he lives on a houseboat?
Is because it brings up the fact that he has a long life. But we also, the implication is, it's acknowledging the fact that one day these bears die.
Yep.
Because Ralph, the omniscient narrator, is like, and even though Ralph lived a long time, he never got back in that water again. Like, you're like, oh, you know when he dies, omniscient narrator.
Yep.
It's not going to be for another few decades, but it's going to be in the next few decades.
Somebody's writing Welcome to Phil Country right now. And they're telling the audience, well, Phil didn't get attacked by that chainsaw this time. He lived his life in fear of the noise until he died.
So, yeah, and that's it.
That's the end of the book.
Yeah, the
no one
book.
Was murdered.
Nobody's
people went to jail for attempted murder.
For attempted murder. They did try to kill him. That was their stated goal.
Okay, it is a happy ending. You know why? Because that new hospital wing, it's for sick kids.
It's just storage.
Yeah, I have headcanon on this now. It's
it's just storage. So you guys had asked at the beginning of this whole episode, what was the lesson of this book?
Yeah.
If they had gone and played video games, Ralph would be dead.
Well, I think there's 2 lessons. There's one, don't gossip about adults.
Never. Mm-hmm. That's against the rules.
Yeah. So
it's forbidden.
But I think 2 is that... maybe there's like a weird lesson for the parents, which is to believe your children when they say something is weird.
Don't just assume that two people are dating. They're a twosome.
Yeah.
But the adults don't seem to really take the children seriously. They don't listen to their concerns, and the children are right.
Just like they are about cereal most of the time.
If the children hadn't done anything, if the cubs had gone off and played their video games, never gone to the carnival, what would be different?
They wouldn't have been able to call the cops.
But it doesn't matter, because Ralph Ripoff would have gotten home anyway.
You're right. He would. The hospital would not have made them...
But Ralph Ripoff could have called the cops. When he got... He could have been like, these guys tried to kill me.
You know what the real lesson of this book is? Everyone made mistakes. None of this book had to happen. Everyone could have had a good time. There would be, and just find some way, other way, do a bake sale, a crooked bake sale.
So the carnival could have just come and gone.
Yep.
As a carnival.
Yeah.
They didn't even have to get involved with Dr. Grizzly.
No, because they would have made more money and they would have avoided going to jail.
And you know what? That is not, there's better ideas on how to make money than run a carnival.
Right. If a hospital wants to make money, that's why they have like a board.
Yep. And bake sales.
And sick. I don't know who decides how a hospital makes money, but
they go to corporations and ask for donations.
They get sponsors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like you'd be like, it'd be like,
invent a new medicine.
There's restaurants like the Burger Bear wing of the.
Yeah, exactly. Some wealthy donor will have the wing named after them.
There is literally a millionaire who lives in town.
Of course.
So why
do
they not just go hit him up for the money?
Is he a jerk?
He is a jerk, but
he's vain. So he would want his name on the wing.
People who donate a lot of money to hospitals are not the nicest people in the world, but they love seeing their names on hospitals.
I do all the time. I just tag everything.
Squire Grizzly, that's his name, Squire Grizzly. The Squire Grizzly wing of the Bear Country Hospital would, if she had gone to Squire Grizzly, the carnival would have come through town. Everyone would have had a great time. They would have lost all their money, a bunch of rubes. And even if...
Too Tall might have died.
And even if... Too Tall is probably dead. Anyway, even if Otto had somehow, there had been some kind of mix up with Ralph, he would have been thrown over. He would have lived. Because he can escape.
Yeah, nothing the Cubs did allowed him to live.
Okay. I have a question too. Like, since the book is called The Freaky Funhouse, I would have wanted the funhouse to have more to do with the book.
Yeah.
At the very least, I want, when they're trying to hide from Otto and Captain Billy, them to accidentally trigger the Frankenbears monsters.
Oh, that would be great.
So that's like, what I thought was going to happen.
Like, the funhouse turns
yes,
on.
Yes, my mast. And they're like, who's over there?
Or the Frankenbear monster gets in Otto's way and allows them to escape.
Oh, they had to hide behind something that they have a base fear of, like skeletons?
Yes. Bear skeletons.
Bear skeletons.
Well, that's what I thought that was going to happen is they're going to hear the Cubs in the trailer, come in after them, and the Cubs would turn on all the works.
I thought the trailer, like I said, it could be called The Berenstain Bears in the Adjoining Room.
Right.
Yeah, because you're
French,
right.
It's a French thriller.
That would be awesome. They fall down, and in the book, they don't hear them. They've already left and they're gone. But, you know, what if they fell, they did hear them, and that forced them to go in? And
so instead, it's Berenstain Bears in the story that did not have to happen. A series of unfortunate events.
But
not that unfortunate.
But I would say that, like, yeah, like it's one of those books that there's a million and one things that could have, that had to occur in order to get to the point at the end where not even what he did was technically illegal, really. She did sign a contract.
She just didn't read it.
She just didn't read it.
Read all the copies. That's, hey, if you're getting a new mortgage, don't get it from someone named Captain Billy.
Yeah, where's your notary? Like, yeah.
And all, like, you know what? Just so much of it, they just play the video games, kids.
I think that is the
lesson.
If it's the summer and it's hot, stay inside and play games.
But like, I really enjoyed how the book first chapter, like, hey, Ralph Ripoff is with Dr. Gert. He's probably trying to swindle her. The book never curves off that.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like they're right from moment one.
Still, I can see that if I was a kid, like 10 or 11, and I read this book, I would think it was pretty smart. Like it would seem like a pretty smart like mystery or thriller.
I like the fact that kids are the ones who figured out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kids rule, adults drool.
So the way we end the discussion is always, would you recommend this book to readers?
You know, I would. It's because it escalates more than you expect it to, so I think the kids would get a thrill out of it.
Yeah.
And if you're reading it as an adult, even though we just explained the entire plot to you, if you go and delete your memory, you're going to be surprised by this book at some point. It's interesting. It's an interesting take on what you think it's going to be.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's totally where I'm at as well. Like it goes places that I was not expecting for what is ostensibly a kid's book. And yeah, that does make it a little surprising. While it doesn't ever waver from the idea that Ralph is a swindler and Dr. Gert's been fooled, It still goes some places that are unusual.
It has some really good insights into carnivals. You know, it calls it a, you know, it calls it a circus.
Yeah,
and it's true that for kids reading this, those Midway games are rigged.
Yeah, by the way, they're rigged.
Like, yeah. If you think it's really hard to get that ping pong ball into that teacup or whatever, it's because it's not supposed to go in.
Yeah. I've gone to like two carnivals this year for various things. There's not been a single person at the Midway. It's just a bunch of bored teenagers like texting.
It's because they all read this book.
That's probably what it is. I mean, since 1995, the Midway business has dried up.
27-year slump. Well, if you are interested in reading The Berenstain Bears and the Freaky Funhouse, it's available on ebook easily on Amazon, or you can go to that Kobo and just buy it and download the file. It's there. It's out. It's just a couple of bucks. So go pick it up and read it on your phone, I guess, like I did.
No, it's great. It's good to have in your pocket.
It's good. It's good. It's a good reference. Just
yeah. If you show up at a carnival and you are unsure about if the Midway games are rigged or not, just pull your phone out, flip through this book, and you will be reminded.
Is that a walking Charlie?
Now, guys, this isn't the only thing we're talking about. Tell me a little bit about the show you guys do.
Okay, yeah. So PredictoCast is basically a show where Brian and I find movies that we have never heard of and don't know anything about, so fairly obscure films, at least by our standards. And then we watch the first 10 minutes of those movies, and we predict what we think comes after that. And then we come back after we've watched the rest of the movie, and we see if our predictions were at all accurate.
Often not. Often we have higher hopes for the movies than the movies deliver.
Yes, that is very true. But it's a lot of fun. It's allowed us to watch some things that I don't think we ever would have seen otherwise.
I would not have watched Dino King. I would not have watched Army Dog.
Definitely not.
And where can our listeners find this fine program?
You can find us wherever you get podcasts or at predictocast.com.
Wonderful. And for all our listeners, you can also find this show at berenstainbearcast.wordpress.com. You can find us on Twitter at bstainbearcast. You can write to me at berenstainbearcast@gmail.com, or you can become a patron of us at patreon.com/deepinbearcountry. Guys, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
Oh, it's always a pleasure.
I'm so glad we were able to do this. And for everyone else out there, we will see you all next week. Deep in Bear Country.
Not saying it with you.